Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
I think it's really remarkable if you look at the breadth of this particular piece of legislation. It is the strongest anti-rioting, pro-law enforcement piece of legislation in the country. And there's just nothing even close.
You know, what actually surprised me a little bit is whenever there's a news event that goes on in Florida or Pensacola, locally, okay, I usually do a scan, at least of the opening tease, one-minute summary, pre-cap of the evening news on NBC, CBS, and ABC, just because I know a lot of times they'll feature us if it's a big enough story, and I'm always kind of curious how it's being portrayed and if it's being mentioned. No mention. Nothing. I actually went ahead and looked through the whole half hour, and I didn't see anything about this, which surprised me, given the level of attention that this has gotten, that this didn't make the evening news on any of the big stations, any of the networks. So I'll check again tomorrow just to kind of see if they catch up after the fact. But HB1 getting signed yesterday is indeed landmark legislation. And, you know, I mean, I can write the headline, sweeping new restrictions on, you know, this is probably how it's going to get presented. So what does it actually do?
So this bill actually prevents against local governments defunding law enforcement. We'll be able to stop it at the state level. And if you look at some of these places that have done this, they've already seen crime go up, even just diverting some of the funding to this. And so it's an insane theory. It's not going to be allowed to ever carry the day in the state of Florida. And this bill gives us the tools to make sure that that doesn't happen.
It allows the state to step in if there's a defund the police movement in a municipality, if it's effective. Counting the dollars, figuring out how to measure whether it was a decline or a reduction, those are all things that I think we're going to have to see the first case to see how this actually gets applied. But that's one of the provisions of the bill, is that local municipalities, it's a preemption of budget cuts, essentially. You don't have any problem with budget increases, although there is a worry that, you know, you might go up this year and then, you know, not go up again next year or reduce back to former levels the following year. Would that count as a defund? As I said, we're going to have to see how application of this turns out. But that's one of the provisions of the bill.
If you're derelict in your duty as a local government, if you tell law enforcement to stand down, then you're responsible for the damage that ensues. And if someone's been harmed or their property has been destroyed, then they can sue you for compensation.
So even if you fund the police, if you tell them to stay out of a protest or to stand down in the presence of a riot, well, guess what? If there's damage, then you can be sued for it, because the municipality normally you have sovereign immunity. You're trying your best, and that's enough. But the point he's saying is, if you don't try your best, you can be sued. Very specific provision for that one. What else?
We also have penalties for people that commandeer highways, which we've saw in other parts of the country. Just think about it. You're driving home from work, and all of a sudden you have people out there shutting down a highway. And we worked hard to make sure that didn't happen in Florida. They start to do that, there needs to be swift penalties, and that's something that just cannot happen.
Good. Good. I completely agree with this. The recent move to try to shut down roads as a form of protest is an act of violence. It is an act of kidnapping. It is an act of interference with freedom of movement. And I'm amazed that people that I get along with great, dearly love and cherish think, they'll say things like, you're taking away all the meaningful forms of protest. I'm like, no, you don't have the right to kidnap people on the road and prevent them from driving through a public right-of-way that is owned by the people. So why is this confusing to you? But that's one part of that provision. Another part of that provision is the affirmative defense in the presence of a riot. He didn't really mention that one yesterday, but that's the idea that if there is a riot and you're in the middle of it and you feel threatened, you have an affirmative defense for taking action. I think this would likely protect somebody who drives through a group of rioters if they are attacking them. And good. I have no problem with that if you're attacking a car. And we have seen this again and again. It's fascinating when you watch some of the videos of mobs attacking people in their vehicles, and then the person drives off through the crowd of rioters. And you hear people describe this as, how dare you? How could you? Unbelievable. You're attacking them with your car. I'm trying to escape. You're actually kidnapping me inside my car and damaging my property, and you're angry. I'm driving to get out of there. The fact that you happen to be standing in front of me doesn't make it my fault. Just like I said, it's kind of unbelievable when you look at how some of this stuff plays out, both in the legislative discussions and certainly in public commentary by people on social media or in the news. What else?
We also saw around the country people toppling monuments of people like George Washington. This bill protects all monuments in Florida. You have no right to go in and take down monuments. We're not going to let the mob win the day with that.
Yeah, look, if you think a monument should come down, there's a process. Are we the society of laws, or are we the society of if you get a couple hundred people together, you can decide what to make true? If a monument needs to come down, then it needs to come down. I don't agree with it, but the whole point of having a democracy is that we have rules and laws, and then we follow a process, and sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. The whole point is to have a peaceful way for some people to lose. And if you don't like the way it's going, you take matters in your own hands. That's vigilantism or mob or riot. And he's right. That should be stopped.
Bill also includes liability for mob intimidation. If you think about it, we saw images of people just sitting outside eating at a restaurant. And then you have this crazed mob circle around them and start screaming and really intimidating. I'm sorry, that's unacceptable. You're going to be held accountable. Mind your own business and leave people alone if they're not bothering you.
It's an extreme variation on disturbing the peace, but we saw this at a local restaurant down in Palafox where the anti-animal abuse activists, the nutties, just, you know, started behaving in a way that I, frankly, would be concerned about if I were eating there. And you have a right to protest. You have a right to say on a public right of way. You don't have a right to surround people and scream at them and yell at them. I mean, just he's right. We should protect the quality of life and peace, right? The idea of disturbing the peace is that we should be promoting the peace. And he's right that we should be protecting people against that kind of intimidation. And then the last one.
And then finally, and probably maybe most importantly, if you riot, if you loot, if you harm others, particularly if you harm a law enforcement officer during one of these violent assemblies, you're going to jail. We're going to hold you accountable, and we're not going to end up like Portland, where this is just a daily occurrence where these people are doing this. They get arrested, they have their mugshot taken, and then they get put right back on the street to do it again.
So this is an ending of the same day catch and release that is very common in these kinds of protests / riots. And he says, you know, you're going to have to see a judge. That's going to take a day or two, typically at least to the next day. And that's a way of solving the problem of just repeatedly going right back to the scene of the riot again. So in short, every provision here to me makes sense. I will tell you, I still have a concern about two things. Number one, I have a concern about disparate enforcement. We'll have to see. Is it being enforced fairly, and is the thing being controlled an actual riot, or is it just a vigorous protest? And we're going to have to see how that plays out. Okay, I think the only way to know whether it's going to work properly or whether it's going to actually work to restrict lawful First Amendment kind of assembly and protest is we're going to have to see the nature of the thing. And here we're going to have a little bit of trust that somebody's going to cover it accurately so we can make a good judgment. That's the first possibility. Number two, and I'm also concerned about this, despite being a supporter of this law, I'm concerned about the chilling effect of the perception that you will be harmed or restricted or arrested for participating in a lawful assembly. See, you can have the right to do a thing and to be legally protected in doing a thing and should be free from consequences in doing a thing, and yet self-restrict because of a fear that somebody will enforce against you or will restrict you, even if they're doing it illegitimately. That's a very real thing. Look, you know, political correctness as a, this is not a legal issue, but this is more of a cultural, you know, psychological issue, is we all have things that we would probably say that we do not say, not because we think they're false, but because we have learned that it's not productive or it gets a response that is undesirable. And so you cater your conversation around the possibility, especially in this era, that there's going to be outrage against you for something. That's the stifling effect of the threat of censorship, right? That's you choosing to internally restrict out of a fear of what could externally happen. That same thing is true here. There may be people, and we'll have to see, and this is going to be a hard one to see because you'd have to see what didn't happen, but there may be people who would otherwise protest and will not, or will not as vigorously, which is also a form of restraint, because they would be concerned that they would be enforced against illegitimately under the guise of this otherwise legitimate law. That's a genuine concern. So I have two concerns. I have a lot of support for this law. I think that given the riots and protests that we saw last year, this is a sensible measure, and we'll see how it winds up playing out in reality. 520 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Can you feel it? Now it's coming back. We can steal it. If we bridge this gap, I can see you. Through the curtains of the waterfall. When I lost it.
Good morning, 523 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
Good morning. Facebook taking action as deliberations in the trial of former Minneapolis cop Derek Chauvin enter day two. The social media giant says the city is high risk and removing all content that calls for violence in the area. Chauvin charged in the death of George Floyd. CDC says COVID vaccines are working despite some breakthrough infections. Out of the 85 million people fully protected, fewer than 6,000 have gotten coronavirus after their second shot, and of those, about 30% showed no symptoms. Well, there's a new guest host on Jeopardy.
And now, here is the guest host of Jeopardy, Anderson Cooper.
And I thought he did good.
Thank you, Johnny Gilbert. Thanks so much to be on this stage where Alex Trebek hosted Jeopardy with such grace and intelligence for so long is really amazing, and it's very humbling. I've been a fan of Alex and Jeopardy since high school. I've competed four times on Celebrity Jeopardy. I won twice, and I lost very badly twice.
Yep. But he did. I thought he did well. I enjoyed his hosting.
Can I be the guy who says this? I don't know if I've said this on the air yet or not, but I'm growing weary of the boilerplate "We love Alex" intro moment that they're all.
Everybody has to.
They don't have to. Yeah. I mean, it's just. Of course, of course, and the fact that, and it's so the same thing. They all. I mean, it's almost like they're reading from the same script.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I thought it, I watched a couple minutes of it. I didn't watch the whole show, but watched a couple. He did fine. I like the first Daily Double. When the guy says, "I'd like to make it a true Daily Double, Alex," because he's wanted to say that his whole life.
I want to say it anyway.
Yeah, that was pretty
so
cool.
So Anderson's the host for the next 2 weeks.
Did you see who's added to the list now?
Oh, somebody's been added?
Uh-huh. We've got a new future celebrity guest host for Jeopardy.
Oh, okay.
Davis.
Davis is going to?
No, not
it?
Davis.
No, oh. No Davis somebody, is the last person that needs to be doing that.
Somebody with, you should be able to get this in one guess.
Okay.
Oh, one guess.
But now the pressure's on.
That's right.
Gee.
Somebody whose father was an extremely famous baseball broadcaster.
Joe Buck?
That's right. See, I told you you'd get in one guess.
And see, you have to know Andrew to really know that answer, but also you have to know baseball.
Yeah,
so.
That's right.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jack Buck, of course, broadcast.
Give me a couple more
Cardinals
seconds. I would have gotten it because I'm familiar with both Bucks.
There you go. Yeah, and I mean, both legendary. But yeah, so he's going to host as well, at least as the report. So coming up in whenever we get through all of the others that are still on the list. All right, Mark. Okay. Thank you. Right. What? You seem to have an adverse reaction to this.
I'm a fan of his dad, not so much him.
Now, see, it's hard to disagree with that.
Yeah.
In the sense of, I mean, who doesn't love Jack Buck?
Yeah.
I think Joe is really good too. Yeah. But you know, I agree with you. You know, if only you could get Jack right, that'd be amazing. All right, Mark. Thanks so much for. Oh, you know what that makes me think though. this is in the realm of it can't happen because you know he's not alive. Harry Carey hosting Jeopardy.
Oh, then that means... So, Will Ferrell needs to reprise his Harry Carey role on SNL.
Oh, man. But do you know how much fun that would be? Oh, my God. That would be amazing. And drunk. I mean, he has to be drunk, of course. 527... I mean, of course, he's dead, so it can't really happen. But I'm imagining in my mind how that would go. They'd get through, like, one-third of one round. That would be great. 526 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Weird development yesterday in the Derek Chauvin trial, which I have been following at arm's length. I just assume that this is going to be a guilty verdict. It's only going to be a question of the degree of the conviction, I suppose. And also because I follow so much local stuff that I just don't have a lot of bandwidth left to pay attention to a national trial for 8 or 10 hours a day. But interesting development yesterday is that the Maxine Waters comments about needing to get more aggressive in your protests in order to be heard and that they have to have a conviction. And now this was brought up by the defense as possible grounds for appeal or possible mistrial. And the judge basically said, yeah, could be. Not for mistrial, but for appeal, because this would be seen as a form of intimidation, would be seen as a form of coercion against the jurors. Very interesting. And it's you've had people calling for her to be expelled from Congress over this because her defenders will say she's just talking the talk of aggressive protest. The critics will say, and I'll tell you the way I heard it is, well, if you are protesting peacefully to the highest degree possible and you're saying you've got more confrontational than that, what does that mean, more confrontational? Other than physical action, right? Direct action, what the military rather euphemistically call kinetic action. You know, if you're not talking about breaking things or assaulting people, I don't know what you're talking about in terms of wanting to be more confrontational. So we'll see. We'll see. You know, if he's convicted, which I assume he will be, then what happens on appeal based on her comments and the surrounding environment?
I'm Jim Chesko with Your Money Now. As of this week, you can buy a rapid coronavirus test, no prescription required, no lab needed, at many CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart locations around the country. Abbott Labs Binax Now self-test kits will sell for about $24 each. United Airlines is out with first quarter results that were even worse than expected. The Chicago-based carrier, devastated by the effects of the pandemic, posted a loss equal to $7.50 a share as year-over-year revenue plunged 60%. United shares were down 1.8% in after-hours trading. In the regular Monday session, stocks lost ground, paced by a 1% drop in the tech-heavy NASDAQ composite. The Dow Jones Industrials fell 123 points, and the S&P 500 eased 22. Some new products, audio products, are on the way from Facebook. The social media giant in the coming months will launch various new products, including one called Live Audio Room, similar to the app Clubhouse, and another called Sound Bites, an audio version of Facebook's short video product, Reels. That's Your Money Now.
I think in terms of identifying a voice, all you'd have to do is play that one little tenth of a second. Die! You know? And everybody should be able to figure out who that is. 538 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Yesterday, we had a really good conversation with Chris Smith of Gulf Coast Gun. Now, if you don't know Gulf Coast Gun, you've never been to Milton. That's all I can figure. Because if you're driving on Highway 90 and you're driving through town, everybody notices his shop because you look over and you see, you know, big old gun store off to the side of the road, set back quite a ways with a bunch of banners and flags and whatnot. But right on the roof, you've got those big silhouette of, AR-15, M16, whatever, and you can't miss it. So those big, beautiful guns silhouetted on the top. I mean, it's a very noticeable kind of signage, so. Anyway, yesterday we had a good conversation with him about guns. Chris, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Great to have you. I listen to you talk a bunch when I see your presentations in the county commission meetings, and I always think you have interesting things to say. And as far as, you know, loving the Second Amendment, I'm not sure there's anybody who loves it more than you, which is why I wanted to have you on. Because some of the things that President Biden has proposed, we were talking about this a little bit last week, but I wanted to just get more clarity. So let's kind of start with a couple of these proposals. The ghost gun proposal, the idea of being able to buy guns that don't have any serial number in their parts and then assemble them yourself. Can you maybe just take a minute and tell people what is the law right now and how would things change if his proposal went into effect?
Right now you can buy 80% lowers and you have to drill them yourself. You have to assemble them yourself. And it's perfectly legal. The thing is what they're mad about is there were kits being sold, but anyone with a CNC machine can build their own firearm. And so banning ghost guns will not do anything to protect anyone or get any guns out of dangerous people's hands, because they're always going to be able to find a way to build their own firearm if they really want to, just like they can purchase their own firearm if they really wanted to.
Okay, so this is a talking point, not really a practical distinction, because the people who know how to assemble a gun would be able to figure out a way to assemble one regardless of the legality of purchasing online a so-called ghost gun kit or an 80% lower. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Everything that he proposed last week was a talking point. None of it would do anything to stop any sort of gun violence or deaths or anything else.
What about the pistol stabilizers issue? Now, I know this is a very complicated topic, but the way I understand it, you correct me if I'm wrong, is they want to reclassify a short barrel AR style, like a 223 weapon that you could attach to your arm to stabilize it, to be fired with one hand. They want to reclassify that as a short barrel rifle, which would bring it under some of the federal firearms bans or restrictions anyway. Who uses these guns, and what would the effect be if they managed to accomplish this? What would it change in terms of the people who actually buy these guns' lives?
There are a lot of people that buy pistols with braces. The thing is they buy them for novelty. At no point does a shorter barrel make your gun more accurate or more dangerous. It actually makes it more inaccurate. In a 5.56 or 223, if it's not a 10-inch barrel, then the gun is very inaccurate anyway. And who would want to make a gun less accurate to begin with? But what they're trying to do is put these pistols with a brace on the NFA list, which if they're so dangerous and they're so scared of them, why aren't they trying to ban them? Why are they trying to put them on an NFA list? All that happens on an NFA list is you pay a $200 tax stamp. You go through the same background check that you would if you were purchasing the gun from my shop. It just takes longer because the ATF does the background check and not the FBI NICS system or the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Depends on background checks depend on your state, but at the end of the day, they all go through the FBI NICS system. So they're not actually doing a different background check. They're not actually taking more steps. They're just charging you $200 to be able to purchase this.
Okay, so if the gun is more dangerous in a way that justifies regulation, then you'd move it into the category with a machine gun, as opposed to just adding a tax cost to it, which raises the difficulty of acquiring it and basically means that only people that have the disposable income can buy it rather than people actually qualify because they're better citizens. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. It just puts another tax on it and makes it harder to get for people with lower incomes.
Well, so, okay, so back to the pistol stabilizer, which is kind of what we're talking about anyway. What about the argument that is made that if you have a pistol stabilizer, it's easier to conceal this gun? Now, I think I know the answer to this, but you've got a gun that's firing a more dangerous round, the .223, even though it's less accurate with a short barrel, it's still a more dangerous round than, say, a 9mm. What about the argument that, hey, that short barrel AR style, okay, is easier to conceal under a coat, and when you pull it out and it's got the pistol stabilizer on it, it's more able to be used than something else that somebody might not be able to conceal as well? Even though the tax issue aside, what would you say to that argument?
It's not easier to conceal. Anybody that's ever had that's bought a pistol with a brace or an SBR. I mean, I currently own a couple of SBRs myself. I had to pay the $200 tax stamp just like everyone
else.
That's
a short barrel rifle for people who don't know the acronyms. Go ahead.
Short barrel rifle, yes. But, I mean, if you compare one to a rifle, when you collapse the stock on the rifle, you're saving, 4 inches most of the time. It's absurd. These are all talking points. And the only reason they're talking about this one this time is because one person used a pistol with a brace. Mm-hmm. That same person would have done just as much damage with a rifle. They just try to inch away and inch away at our Second Amendment right every single time they get an opportunity to. And this is just another opportunity for them to do that.
And again, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the idea of a concealable rifle, short barrel rifle with a pistol stabilizer, well, the way you would conceal something would be to have it under your coat. But if your arms are out, you're going to have to take a moment to do the attaching of it with the pistol stabilizer. So in that time frame, it's not concealable. I mean, it's actually a fairly slow process to bring that into functional status, right?
Yes. And I mean, honestly, there's not... honestly, the .223 and .556 is not more dangerous than the 9mm. They say that it's a higher capacity magazine. It's not. I can get a 50-round drum on just about any pistol that I wanted to.
Right.
And the higher the capacity, the heavier the gun's going to be, the harder the gun is to use, the harder the gun, it's less accurate because it is harder to use, the more likely to have failures to feed on the firearm. Honestly, there's no way I would put these huge high-capacity magazines in my firearm if I was using them to save my life or for some reason other than just going out to the range and having a good time with it.
Yeah, right. And because, the higher capacity ones, you have a higher failure rate. The spring is, has to be bigger to push all of those bullets up. I mean, they're not really, there's a reason that the military doesn't use these. It's because they don't work as
Absolutely.
Well. One of the arguments that comes up quite frequently is the magazine size. As you said, the big magazines are not all that reliable anyway, but they'll say a 10-round magazine, whether for a pistol or for a rifle, is always adequate for any need. 20 or a 30, or like in the case of a Glock 19, a 17 round that the side by side. What would your response be to people who say that you don't need anything more than 10 rounds ever?
Well, I mean, police officers get into situations where they have to have, 30 rounds to fire into them. No one knows how many rounds you're ever going to need until you're in a certain situation. So how could someone come out and say that, you only need 10 rounds? Well, if three home invaders come into your home and you've never been in this situation before, I mean, your adrenaline takes over. They say that your mind gets cloudy. So how do you know that you're only going to need 10 rounds? And about the time I have to reload, I have to put another magazine in my firearm, that could cost me my life or cost one of my kids their life at that point. So 10 rounds is just absurd. At the end of the day, these are all talking points. They just want to control us. And the fact that they don't actually, if they wanted to save lives, then they would stop other things. Guns only, I think it registers about 25th on the things that kill most Americans. 30 to 40,000 people are killed by guns every year. Half of those are suicides. See, that's a that's a mental issue at that point.
Right.
So you take that down to 15 to 20,000 people are killed by guns every year. You're more likely to die from falling than you are from gun violence.
Yeah,
it's a proven fact. You can look it up.
Yeah, the issue of suicide
is
certainly.
If you're Joe Biden, you're probably 10 times more likely to die from falling. But you know, that's a different conversation. But it's not about saving lives. There's 250,000 people die every year from medical malpractice. 600,000 people a year die from heart disease. I think it's around that same number for cancer. So if they were actually interested in saving lives, they'd be looking at things like that. Car accidents cause just as many deaths as gun violence. So
hey Chris,
it's really about control.
Yeah, in terms of the magazine size, I actually was thinking that the Oakwood terrorist shooting was one of those situations where, you know, if I've got a 10-round magazine, I've got to be really, really good in order to defend myself in a situation against four armed gunmen. 17, at least I've got a chance, or 30 or something. I mean, just, you know, not that you'd have that handy. But last question I wanted to ask you about is it's just the ammunition shortage. Why is there, it's still on, right? Like it's hard to find ammunition and even guns too, but why ammunition is still short?
So you have to take into account that there were 50 million households that owned firearms before the pandemic started. Mm-hmm. They added about 10 million households, which is about two per household. So 100 million people have been buying ammunition in bulk since March of 2020. There's no industry that could hold a rush like that. And they're still buying ammunition. It hasn't stopped. The manufacturers cannot keep up. And the reason you're not seeing it in the big box stores is because they have contracts at lower prices. The big box stores are trying to get their fill of ammunition from Federal and CCI and places like that at these lower contracts that they signed 2 and 3 years ago. Well, these companies, with their shortage, are not selling them as much. So you're not seeing it in the big box stores. Stores like mine have had ammunition on the shelf almost the entire year, and that's because we're going out and paying higher prices for it.
I got you.
You know, there's still a shortage out there. They have to change over their lines to do a different caliber. So once they change over their lines to do a certain caliber, 9mm gets harder to get, or 380 gets harder to get. You'll see a little run of 38 special or 357, but at the end of the day, they're just trying to catch up. I mean, 100 million people went out and bought 100 boxes of ammunition in a year's time. That's a killer on an industry.
No, that makes sense. Well, that helps. I mean, it's kind of, I kept wondering, why does it continue? But as you say, more people are buying guns, and more people who have guns are buying more ammunition for a variety of reasons. And that's just basic economics. Chris Smith, a Gulf Coast gun hunter. Chris, hey, thanks for the time, man. Really interesting stuff. I certainly appreciate it. I know as you're getting your family ready for school and all that stuff this morning, but thank you so much for the time, man.
That's all right. Thank you for having me, Andrew. Also, I want to say, if anybody wants to check out any more gun laws, we do a live Facebook and YouTube show every Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. called The Gun Show. So
oh, nice.
Check it out on Gulf Coast Guns Facebook page.
And it's not a bicep reveal. The Gun Show. 5:51 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Today's the day when there is a very, very, very light chance of rain. The rest of the week, it's supposed to be clear. So today is the day. And just taking a quick peek at the News Radio ThreatNet radar, there's a little bit of scattered, you know, greenish sort of stuff in the area, maybe a little bit of yellow to our north. So let's make it zero. Let's go ahead and have a zero rain day. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Mark?
Do not travel to 80% of the world. That's what the State Department will officially say later this week. The update will add nearly 130 countries said to be at level 4. They'll join 34 already on the list, including places like Brazil, Argentina, and Russia.
And isn't their advisory like, we don't want you to travel anywhere, but if you have to travel, at least don't travel here because they don't have enough testing on the ground, basically.
Right. Pretty much.
I mean, it's just, okay.
It's the same as they've been saying here at home. I mean, don't travel unless you really need to.
Right. And okay, go ahead.
Tributes pouring in for former Vice President Walter Mondale. The 93-year-old died of natural causes yesterday. He ran against President Reagan in 1984 and said this when he accepted the Democratic nomination.
Whoever is inaugurated in January, the American people will have to pay Mr. Reagan's bills. The budget will be squeezed. Taxes will go up. And anyone who says they won't is not telling the truth to the American people.
And then came this, which many believe doomed his campaign.
Mr. Reagan will raise taxes, and so will I. He won't tell you. I just did.
And in the most lopsided election loss in history, Mondale won just his home state of Minnesota, and only by about a quarter point. And as it turned out, he was right. Reagan did raise taxes.
Well, but how dare you say the truth? Yeah, no, this was... Walter Mondale is probably most well-known for two things. First person nominated female vice president, right?
Geraldine Ferraro.
Mm-hmm. And getting absolutely murdered at the polls.
I mean, he only won Minnesota by about 20.20%.
And he got wiped out. He won D.C. also, although they don't count quite the same. But I guess he won D.C. But yeah, just got wiped out across the board in 49 other states and almost lost his home. I mean, can you imagine almost losing your home state as a presidential candidate? That's amazing.
That would be even more embarrassing than not winning the 49 others.
Right. It'd be like, what if you, in a presidential contest, what if you won 49 of the states and lost your home state? You'd be president, but it'd look bad. All right, Mark, thanks. And he was, what, 93, you said? 93?
Correct.
Interesting. How old is Jimmy Carter? 96?
96, 97, okay. Something like that.
Okay. Yes. Oh, and oh my God. But he gave opportunity for one of the greatest comments in political history, right? Because Reagan was older.
Oh, yes.
And Reagan had the line of the ages on his age.
I am not going to exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience.
I mean, that is one of the all-time greatest debate comments.
Yep.
Just, yeah.
That and there you go again.
Right. All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. 557 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Davis, I hate to do this to you.
Are you going to give me a math question?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Prior to the last 5 minutes, had you ever heard the name Walter Mondale?
Of course.
Oh, okay. Well,
of course.
Geraldine Ferraro?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I do know my presidents and, well, potential, well, not even close, candidates.
Well, he's a vice president before that.
He
too,
was vice
so,
president, okay. So I was
check.
Aware.
I just check. You know a lot given your age, and I never know what you might or might not know. And I thought we'd find an interesting moment of generation gap, and we didn't. So good to you. It's 5:57. I'm Andrew McKay. History, some pretty bad things. The Columbine Massacre, 1999, this day in history. Then you had the Johnson Space Center shooting in 2007. But the one that is the most relevant to us here locally is in 2010, the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico. That killed 11 people and started what we all know of, and I knew from a distance, but as this terrible tragedy with the oil spill. We'll be back in just a minute.